Thanksgiving is tomorrow, and I bet there are a lot of us out there already thinking about the diet we're going to be on after all this feasting is over. We do this every single year, especially women. There's always this guilt looming during the holidays, and then a promise to ourselves that we're going to start the year off right in time for swimsuit season or something like that. Well, writer and fat studies scholar Virgie Tovar is encouraging all of us to stop this vicious cycle. She says diet culture is not only personally damaging, it's fueling fat phobia. And she joins us now with some tips on how to approach Thanksgiving. Welcome, Virgie.
Thank you for having me.
So you say that we cannot honestly discuss diet culture without recognizing that fat phobia and diet culture go together like milk and cookies. Explain what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, to unpack even those terms, fat phobia is a form of bigotry that essentially says that fat people are inferior and that weight gain is a sign of moral inferiority. Fat phobia is not about improving people's lives. It actually really, really harms people's lives. And that we see that all over the size spectrum. When I talk about diet culture, I'm really talking about sort of the omnipresent status quo that we have in our culture and the West generally that really does consistently encourage weight loss, that essentially lauds weight loss at any cost, that equates weight loss and thinness with health, and that normalizes an environment in which anxiety and fear of food and our bodies are considered normal.
Right, which brings us to Thanksgiving, which is tomorrow.
Yes.
And it's a time when we're indulging in all of our favorite foods. But this is also, as I said, the ramp up to the season of excessive dieting. And a lot of people will say, hey, well, I ate like a pig. I need to get healthy. You say diet culture is everywhere. What are some ways we interact with it on a daily basis that we may not recognize?
One of the things that really surprised me when I started working with women who are recovering from years and years and years of either disordered eating or chronic dieting, they consistently talked about one unexpected place where they experienced the most hostility, and that was the workplace. And I was literally, it blew my mind. I was expecting family or romantic or dating, whatever. I mean, you've probably heard this, that kind of food chatter that goes on at the office. Like, oh my goodness, these cookies are so bad. Oh my goodness, somebody brought a cake. This place is terrible. You know, what are you doing? You're being so good at lunchtime going on a walk, or are you eating
Virgie
a salad? Yeah, like that thing, you know?
Virgie, actually, my studio is, I have a window and I can see the kitchen to our building. And there are always cookies and other treats there, but they're always cut in like these little slices because everyone does not want to take a full cookie. They don't want to be that person.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yes. I mean, I literally, I wrote this article a couple years ago that got a lot of hate, and it was like, I will not cut you a smaller slice of cake. You just have to take the cake that I am giving you. Anyway, like, you know, I mean, absolutely. And I think like, right, we're taught as women, like we're so, and I mean, I think this includes like people of all genders. We're kind of socialized to believe that this kind of idle food chatter is innocuous and that it's actually kind of a fun way to connect with people.
Mm-hmm. In your book, You Have the Right to Remain Fat, which I read, by the way, and we'll get to that in a moment. Mm-hmm. You reference Naomi Wolf's writings in The Beauty Myth that says, quote, dieting is the most potent political sedative in women's history. Explain this. And also, you say that it's also a byproduct, or it's a show of misogyny in our misogynistic culture.
Women see dieting, we've been taught to see dieting as a method of self-improvement. And this isn't just women. It's exacerbated for women because women are taught to trade our bodies to get access to commodities, right? Like things that matter to us, like marriage, jobs, clothing. We know that dieting, weight cycling, whatever you want to call it, that it is not efficacious. It literally does not work. And it ultimately creates over time an upward trajectory in weight. We do know that it's highly correlated with depression, anxiety, increased likelihood of developing an eating disorder, and a number of other things that I would argue are pretty objectively negative things. And we're being told that this is for our own good. I mean, I think of that as a political sedative. Absolutely right. Because women are being told that a behavior that has been proven to be negative and deleterious is a positive thing for them, which is deeply confusing.
No matter what you say, though, there are going to be people listening to this who will say fat positivity is promoting unhealthy eating behaviors and that being obese poses a real health risk. What do you say to this?
Yeah, I mean, I think so the data point that doctors and lots of people are really, really attached to is this data point that says thin people live longer, better lives. This is a very we need to unpack this. It's really, you really cannot make this statement in a vacuum. What I do know and what we know about public health is that people have this idea that when it comes to your health and it comes to health outcomes, if we were looking at it as like a pie chart, that the biggest slice of the pie is our individual behaviors. That is just patently false. What we know is that the social determinants of health have a much larger impact on the outcomes we're going to have, how long we're going to live, how healthful we're going to be. And these, many of them are things we can't control. They include things like childhood experiences of trauma. They include things like access to clean water, job opportunities, income. A lot of these things are things that are outside of the control of individuals. And we really need to understand health in that model.
Mm-hmm. I got through your book so fast. And I have to say that I was really emotional reading it because, I mean, if we're really honest, in our society, restricting ourselves is almost the mark of being a woman.
Oh, yeah.
And here you are saying, and I'm going to quote from your book, "I wish someone had told me 28 years ago that it was okay to be fat, that fat people deserve to be treated with full dignity and humanity." But Virgie, this really goes against everything our society tells us about ourselves and our bodies. I'm just wondering, truly, if someone had told you that 28 years ago, do you think you would have listened? There's so many other messages out there coming at you at the same time.
There's a part of me that thinks yes. There's a part of me that thinks no. I mean, I remember being in the depths of my own self-hatred. And, you know, even in college, I remember seeing a fat performer, sharing this piece that she had written about being a fat person and loving her fat. And I was mortified. I felt like she was exposing this, like, horrible secret that I had been that I thought I could hide body.
Can we talk about that for a moment? Because as someone who has battled with weight for all of my life. And I do call it a battle. And that's something you probably would not use, a term you would use. But it is something that we kind of inside think, okay, it's a secret that nobody else knows. Like to come out and say, I'm coming out as fat is almost is painful. It's like acknowledging that you are indeed fat.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that strikes to so many components. People think that they're terrified of fat. What they're actually terrified of is the experience that they have seen fat people have over and over and over again. They know the attitudes culturally that people have towards fat people, and they are terrified of the bigotry itself. And they transpose that onto the fat, right? So it's important to recognize, right, there are cultures where fatness is totally lauded and considered very attractive and healthful and whatever, including our own culture at certain historical moments. At the end of the day, the meaning of fat and thin are socially constructed. They're time-bound. They're not sort of this, like, time immemorial. Everybody has loved this one kind of body type. That's not how it's worked. But, yeah, I think to really come to terms with being fat is to come to terms with the fact that you are going to stand unapologetically against every single gender norm in this culture. And that is a very, very daunting task.
Do you think that we're living in a moment in history where radical body positivity might be more possible today than in the past?
Yeah, I don't think it's a moment, right? I'm actually like, I think, you know, I think about the CEO of this incredible plus size company called 11 Honoré says it's not a moment, it's a movement. I think that we are seeing a major shift that we're not going to see the end of. I think this is fourth wave feminism, TBH.
Mm. Okay, so I'm headed home to bake some sweet potato pies and mac and cheese. My favorites on Thanksgiving.
Yes.
What are your tips for everyone tomorrow to avoid continuing this cycle of fat phobia, especially during the holiday season?
For everyone, we can all just opt out of talking about food and bodies. Just call a moratorium on it. Just enjoy. Just be. For those of you who are terrified I would really offer to have a little plan leading up to and perhaps even after the meal. Like, take care of yourself after. If you know that there's a likelihood that you're going to get triggered or people are going to be food shaming or body shaming you, take a few minutes today to write out a plan that you're going to implement afterwards. And I think for a lot of people, what happens is they get triggered into that really deep weight loss behavior, which is deeply harmful for most people. And so, right, like that plan is about not going to that place, just taking a minute, taking a breather. And if you have a little bit of extra time, figure out some boundaries you want to set, you know, going into the thing, like how you're going to exit conversations that are upsetting, what you might say to a person very quickly when you're not interested in having the conversation that they might want to have that might be fat phobic or food shaming. Those are my tips.
Writer and fat study scholar Virgie Tovar, thank you so much for joining us, and happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, thank you.